Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, Wednesday edition of the Steve Jones Show. It's our best of edition on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And Sean Carey here, Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very, very, very slow go in a big chunk of the central Susquehanna Valley because of the closure of Route 15 at the Union-Snyder County line. Looks like it could be closed through the weekend because of the crane and beam accident that occurred last night as part of the thruway construction project. So that's causing extra slower delays through Sunbury, especially traveling along Front Street. Very slow go. Probably will get even slower over the next hour or two as we head toward the 5 o'clock rush. So head to WKOK.com for the complete detour information on that. Of course, if anything changes in regards to the reopening of Route 15, which, like I said, may not happen for the next 3 or 4 days, we will definitely let you know. We'll also post that information on the WKOK Facebook, and we'll tweet it out as well. Follow us on Twitter at WKOK1070. Our show handle on Twitter is at SteveJonesPSU, SteveJonesShow.com, on Facebook as well, with breaking sports news, podcast details, and so much more. Yeah, speaking of our podcast, subscribe to the Steve Jones Show podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcast App, Google Play. Just type in Steve Jones Show, and when you subscribe, the live shows, after they air live on WKOK, they'll drop right to your smartphone and tablet, so you'll have instant, on-demand access to all of our shows. So we're with you live till 5, then we'll have the late-day news roundup at 5:06 with Matt Cotrillo. And then we'll head into Phillies baseball tonight on WKOK. On deck at 6:30 with Jim Jackson. 7:05 first pitch with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson. Back into the two-game series with the Phillies and Boston Red Sox. Man, they are on a blistering pace. Boston's won 11 out of their first 12, pushing their record 51 games above 500. They're 86-35, so looking to go to 6 straight tonight if they get another win over Philadelphia. Vince Velasquez is 8-9. For the Phillies, and Nathan Eovaldi 5-4 for Boston. They will square off on the mound tonight. So Boston is on pace to win 115 games this season. They're 17-5 since the All-Star break. And thanks to a pinch-hit home run by Brock Holt last night, Boston gets the win 2-1. Only two hits for the Phillies last night. One of those a solo shot by Rhys Hoskins. But getting back to Vince Velasquez, he's got a 2.68 ERA in his last 10 appearances, but only lasted 4 innings during his last start. Gave up 4 runs on 6 hits last Wednesday against Arizona. Velasquez has faced Boston just once in his 4-year career. As a member of the Astros, he gave up 3 runs and struck out 7 in 6 innings in a matchup against the Red Sox in 2015. Now, for Eovaldi, he is making his 4th start for Boston, his 5th major league team. The 28-year-old has made 9 starts against the Phillies in his career. He's 3-4 with a 3.5 ERA. And he's facing a Phillies offense that has struggled. The last week, Phillies have scored only 16 runs in their last 7 games. You break that down, that's 2.3 runs per game. And they've only won 2 games out of their last 7. And they have now fallen to 2nd place behind the Atlanta Braves as they continue to take care of business over the Miami Marlins. So I bet for you tonight, Phillies Red Sox, 6:30 on deck, 7:05 first pitch. There will be no Steve Jones Show tomorrow. That'll be the start of a 5-game series with the Mets. Tomorrow is a single admission doubleheader. So there you go, Phillies fans. 2 for the price of 1 at Citizens Bank Park. 3:30 will be the airtime tomorrow for the start of that doubleheader. And we will continue WKOK News and CBS Sports Radio on WKOK.com throughout the late afternoon, early evening. So the back end of that five-game set between the Phillies and Mets, that'll be at historic Bowman Field in Williamsport at BB&T Ballpark for the second annual MLB Little League Classic. And that'll be a 7:05 start on Sunday night. Of course, we'll have it for you as well here on WKOK. And speaking of Major League Baseball, we'll be hearing Steve's thoughts on that in just a moment. So tell you what we have lined up here on the show today. We will go back to the fall of 2016, and we will replay an interview that Steve did with legendary Penn State linebacker Steve Smear, one of Jack Ham's teammates. And we had Steve on the show back in September of 2016 when we did our special week-long series of special interviews, which was our countdown to marking the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno's first game as head coach of the Nittany Lions. So we'll replay that interview with Steve Smear at 3:35. Former Alabama Radio Network football analyst Phil Savage, who is now part of the Alliance of American Football, his new gig. We'll find out more about that from Phil at 4:06. So looking forward to playing those back for you as our best of week continues. So let's talk a little more Major League Baseball with Steve.
And we're in our seventh year now doing the show. We got a lot coming up, too. It's going to be a great fall around here. We're going to have a lot of great guests on, talking a lot about football, Eagles, Steelers, and, of course, a lot on Penn State. Jack Ham and I really like what we see with this football team, and we'll give you reads on camp as time goes. Major League Baseball, I think one of the problems they have, and what I'm about to propose, they won't do. And probably financially they can't do it. When you're sitting there with a Bryce Harper, for example, and people are telling him he might get the first $400 million contract. Look at Zach Greinke's contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Look at David Price's contract with the Red Sox and Kershaw's contract with the Dodgers. Yet to be able to pay for those contracts. And the way you pay for it would be TV contracts, radio contracts, and, yes, attendance, which means you have to be playing games. So, now, I've talked before about Major League Baseball lopping off 18 games, which is 9 home games for each franchise to get it to 144, and they're not going to do that. In fact, to be honest with you, I think they need even more radical surgery than just 18 games, because right now the season ends right around September 30th. So if you knock 18 games off, two off days in there, that's 20, so September 10th. I think they need to lop off. I think if they played a 130-game season, I think they'd have a better chance actually of succeeding with the fans. Because what does the NBA have going for it right now? And to a certain extent, the NHL. I mean, the NHL doesn't have anywhere near the TV ratings for the Stanley Cup final that the NBA final has. But the NBA playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs, but primarily the NBA playoffs, don't have any competition. What's the competition for the NBA playoffs? Competition for Major League for the NBA playoffs would be early season, regular season baseball, and the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes. Maybe the Indianapolis 500. That's it. That's their competition when they get to their postseason. Same story for the Stanley Cup playoffs, but the NBA playoffs have been a rousing television success, and the NBA has marketed itself brilliantly. Now let's get to Major League Baseball. What's their competition once they hit their golden time of the year? Pennant races get lost nationally because of the NFL and college football. The NFL and college football bury Major League Baseball. They bury them. This is a country that loves its football. Now you look at the Phillies. The Phillies are playing great, great, great. But what's going to be the dominant story the second the Eagles take the field? The defending Super Bowl champion for the first time ever. You get to say the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Even when the Eagles weren't Super Bowl champs, they owned that city. Now they're defending Super Bowl champs. The second they take the field, they will dominate and suck all the oxygen out of the baseball room. even though the Phillies are having a magical summer. I think the Phillies are having a magical summer. But I'm being realistic here. College football dominates the landscape across the country. You look at the opening weekend of the season, you have Penn State as Appalachian State, but the opening weekend includes Michigan and Notre Dame. Casual fans will watch Michigan and Notre Dame. The next weekend, Penn State plays Pitt. Now, these are college games taking place in the pennant race. Okay, the final weekend of the regular season in Major League Baseball will include Penn State and Ohio State at Beaver Stadium. Okay, the final weekend of the regular season in baseball will include Penn State and Ohio State at Beaver Stadium. Baseball has a problem because when they hit their playoffs, first of all, football's already popular, so the college football playoff, bowl games, and the NFL playoffs. The NFL playoffs are in January. What are they up against in January, playoff-wise? Their playoffs are up against regular season college basketball, regular season NBA, regular season NHL, and that's it. And college football, of course, has separate days. So the NFL does not compete its game days against college football. So they've got it all to themselves. Okay, college football, bowl games during the course of the week. This is their postseason. College football playoff on the last Saturday of the calendar year. And then the championship game on a Monday night. Again, not up against significant competition. So college football has its postseason virtually to itself. Because, again, the NFL does not play the same days as a college football game. Okay? They've worked out a great arrangement there. Unless it's Thursday night, but that's a different story. All right. And the NFL playoffs don't compete with anything significant. You notice the Daytona 500 is 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. The NBA is the same thing. They hit their postseason. They got regular season baseball. You know, maybe a Kentucky Derby that may, for two minutes, take away from what's going on in the NBA playoffs and the NBA finals. Really are uncontested. They just have regular season Major League Baseball. What does Major League Baseball have to contend with? Hey, they finally hit their zenith at the end of September, and then it's time for October. Well, unfortunately, in October, you have college football, the NFL, burying Major League Baseball. Now, they're never going to do this. They will never do this. They're going to stick with the, maybe you might see a roll back to 154 games. Maybe. But the owners can't afford to lose dates. That's why you look at the NBA and the NHL, you're saying, why are they play 82 games? They probably should play 60. But they can't lose dates. And the NHL, the NHL does not make money for its franchises until after they're done with the second round of the playoffs. That's how extended they get. Now, their TV contracts are not in the same. The NHL TV contract's not in the same realm as the NBA. I mean, the NBA is getting $2.6 billion a year now. But that's how long it takes, you know, them to make money. It's the same story in baseball. I mean, a lot of franchises don't make money until once they get to, you know, September. They finally clear that hurdle. I mean, I was just talking earlier about Chris Archer's contract being so club-friendly. Well, yeah, it is club-friendly, and it fits their budget. Well, not all contracts are club-friendly, right? They are club-friendly. That's why in the off-season they make so much noise about free agency. But to me, we've hit August now. What's going on in August? You know, we used to kid the suit about this all the time. But, I mean, August is as dead a month as there is in the sports calendar. Yeah, you got the Little League World Series. That's nice, okay? But that's nice. That's a nice event. ESPN does a great job covering it. Not a good job. ESPN does a great job of covering it. But the Little League World Series is a nice event, right? It's not life and death, even though certain organizations try to cheat to get there. I've never understood that. They're 12-year-olds. I don't get that part. And, yeah, you got the IndyCar race at Pocono, which is important locally. And you got training camp and football. Penn State's in camp starting on Friday. And the Steelers are in Latrobe right now. And the Eagles are down in Philadelphia getting ready for the season. You don't have any competition in August. Baseball could really generate some juice and then maintain a little bit where they get the opening playoff games, you know, right after Labor Day before the get the playoffs going before the NFL starts on that Thursday night. And then they could really own September, you know, to a point against early season NFL games where it still feels like it's baseball season. I mean, to me, if they ended the season on August 31st, I think it would be really smart for Major League Baseball. I think it would help them so much, but they'll never do it because they can't lose the dates. I mean, you're asking now each club to lose 15 home dates apiece. In other words, lose 30 games, play a 130 or 132-game schedule. They'll never do it. But to me, if you want to put baseball in a position to have its best showcase, that's what they should do. In fact, I'd take it even further. I'd actually have the playoffs in the month of August. Right? Take that deadest sports month of the year, and it is dead. I mean, high school football this year is going to start on the 24th of August. But take the deadest sports month of the year and use it to your advantage. You probably ought to end the season on like August 5th or 6th and then hit the playoffs and then do that. They'll never do it. But they should take advantage of one of the truly dead months of the year and make something out of it. They'll never do it. I understand exactly why they won't do it. But I think they do need to shorten the season because they're the only sport that goes up against major, major competition against their postseason. And the ratings reflect it.
Nobody likes road work. And we've seen a lot of it this summer.
And there's more.
Roadwork is scheduled for North 4th Street in Sunbury on the 16th. So now is the time to get to Sunbury Motors Ford before the roadwork begins. SMC is on a mission to sell 50 vehicles in just 5 days.
Before the roadwork starts.
Save up to a whopping $16,200 on the area's largest selection of new 2018 Ford trucks. Choose from over 80 trucks with new 2018 Ford F-150s slash to as low as $25,995. Pick from 56 2018 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $18,820. And there's 0% financing for up to 72 months, plus discounts as high as $5,000 on many new Fords. SMC has 21 2018 Ford Focuses, starting at $14,925. SMC is on a mission to sell 50 vehicles before the North 4th Street road work begins. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And we have one more best of week here for the summer. Then we'll go back into full live tilt action, football talk, baseball talk, so much more as we wrap up summer and head into fall. Sean Carey here will guide you through best of today and on Friday. No show tomorrow because of the Phillies and Mets doubleheader, which will be a 3:30 airtime tomorrow afternoon here on 1070 AM. But of course, you'll still be able to hear Dan Patrick's show replay, late day news roundup, and CBS Sports Radio on WKOK.com tomorrow night while the Phillies doubleheader is on 1070 AM. So we'll check this day in sports history, and it was one of the biggest, I don't want to say choke, some would probably call it one of the biggest choke jobs in sports. But when you bring up the name Greg Norman, there are quite a few golf fans that think of this moment. It's part of his, I hate to say part of his legacy, but when you think of Greg Norman, a lot of people think of that moment, PGA Championship. It happened this day, 25 years ago, in Toledo, Ohio, at the Inverness Club. Maybe it was just Paul Azinger's time. Dramatic end of the 75th PGA Championship. Both Norman and Azinger finished tied after 72 holes. Norman watched two putts in sudden death roll hard against the left edge of the hole, only to spin out to the left. First miss from 20 feet out cost him the outright victory, and then his second consecutive major championship. The second was from 5 feet out, and that came after Azinger lipped out a six-footer of his own, and it gave Azinger his first major championship. He fired a closing 3-under par 68, included birdies on four of the last 7 holes. Norman narrowly missed a birdie putt on the first extra hole, and he began the day with a one-stroke edge over a tightly bunched leaderboard. So he and Azinger were tied at 12-under par 272, and then the lip-outs, the meltdown began. But had Greg Norman won that PGA Championship 25 years ago today, it would have been the first time a player had won the British Open and PGA Championship in the same year, since Walter Hagen did it back in 1924. Also this day in sports history, 1975, Baltimore Orioles manager Earl Weaver. He managed to 4 pennants and 1 world championship, but forever drove umpires crazy. This day in 75, he was ejected from not one, but both games. It was a doubleheader that day by the same ump, Ron Luciano. Weaver was ejected 90 times in his career. And that's a look at this day in sports history. So it was history back in September of 2016 when Penn State football recognized the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno as the head coach of the Nittany Lions. And that was the day Penn State played Temple in mid-September 2016. And that week leading up to that big day in Happy Valley, we were very fortunate enough to reconnect with a lot of Joe's great players over the decades, including Jack Ham's teammate, legendary Penn State linebacker Steve Smear.
Very pleased to bring in one of the true greats in Penn State football. Our paths have crossed many times over the years now. Steve Smear. Steve, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Glad to be with you.
All right. Let's at least get to the big part first. Everyone okay. knows that along the way, Steve Smear was able to at least mention to somebody, you know, about this guy he played high school football with. So you can set the story straight as to how Jack Ham got to Penn State.
Well, you know, it happened this way. He came up to Penn State in, I think, right after the last blue-white game of my the blue-white game in my freshman year. And so he comes up and he stays with me. First of all, he watches me playing the spring game, and I was moved to defensive tackle, and I was terrible, you know. And so after the game, after the blue-white game, he says to me, you stink. And I said, I know. I can't play here, you know. So we go over to meet with a group of recruits. That these were mostly guys that already decided to go to Penn State. And Hammer is like, you know, he's like, nobody talks to him. I don't even think Joe said hello to him. So both of us, you know, I'm wanting to transfer, and he's like, why did they invite me up? They didn't even talk to me. You know, I said, hey, don't worry, we'll go to IUP. So about 2 or 3 days later, I get a call from, you know, the secretary in Joe's office to come and see him. And I thought, oh, boy, you know, he's heard him thinking about transferring, because the last time he had his secretary call me was after my first term that year when I got a 1.6. And he was, like, giving me the, you know, the stuff about my mother. I was going to break my mother's heart, and, you know, I was the worst human being on the face of the earth. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? He's going to say, hey, I heard you're going to transfer, and, you know, I was really worried about it. So I go up there, and the first thing Joe does, I go in, and I'm a little nervous, and he says, hey, don't worry about playing defensive tackle. You'll be okay. He said, but the real reason why I called you up is we had somebody back out of a scholarship, and we have one scholarship to give. And he said, I don't want you to tell me how good of a football player, you know, you think Hammer is, but I want you to tell me what kind of a person he is. And I said, well, you know, there's no question that he's a great person. He's going to work hard. He's going to do everything you ask him to do. And he said, on that recommendation, I'm going to take him, you know. So he took him, Steve. And, of course, when he brought him up to Penn State, you know, that first year, he was the best player by far of that freshman class. And that included, you know, the high school All-Americans and all that good stuff. And what was funny was when Joe presented him at the Hall of Fame, you know, when Hammer got inducted into the Hall of Fame, Joe got up and he said, you know, everybody thinks I'm so smart. He goes, you know, about this Ham guy, and he said, you know, we didn't even have to give him a scholarship. His dad was going to pay his way to go to Penn State. So how smart am I? We wasted a scholarship on him. We wouldn't have had to pay him we wouldn't have had to pay for a scholarship that first year. And so, you know, it hits home. One other funny story about Joe. I was thinking about when with recruiting. I can remember one time I went to a gathering down in Washington D.C. and there were a bunch of high rollers down there. Must have been 500 people in the room. And I don't know, the question came up, a guy raises his hand and Joe asked, you know, Joe said, okay, you got a question? And the guy starts off by saying, Joe, I don't know how well we're doing recruiting. Notre Dame got this player and that player and this player. And I said, oh boy, because I knew what was going to happen. And I thought, oh boy, but this guy is going to get creamed. And Joe goes, what are you talking about? I don't even know if the kids that we recruit as freshmen, I don't even know if they're going to fall in love with some girl and never even show up for the first practice of freshman year, you know? And I thought if that guy could have crawled under that table, you know, 500 people there, you know, Joe, what are you talking about? I don't know anything about these kids. We don't know anything. We don't even know if they're going to show up, you know? And, oh, God. You know?
What are you doing?
I mean, Steve, it was priceless. I mean, because as soon as the guy said, you know, about recruiting, and I thought, God.
At that point, your heart sinks. You know there are certain subjects.
Yeah, you know, Joe, about a freshman, you tell somebody coming in, and that's when freshmen didn't play yet, you know?
Right.
And he the poor guy, you know, I thought, oh, wow, you know, just crawl under the table, you know, just get out of here, whatever, you know. But, that was the story.
Well, I'll tell you, and interesting about Jack is Joe told me a few years ago, he said, you know, when he got brought Jack into camp, he said, after the first week, he said, I looked at all the other assistant coaches. I said, how did people miss on this guy? He said, you know, he was phenomenal. What was Joe like, though, in the early days? Neil Smith said the other day, he said, look, he really was driven hard early. He thought because he was trying to prove to everybody, look, I can be a head coach. I mean, is that what you sensed early on, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, he was, you know, because he had that, you know, that first year, that 5-5 year, and then, you know, we started off losing to Navy, you know, that our sophomore year, and I mean, he made those changes right away on defense. I mean, you know, the Miami game was our second game, and I don't know that he started any of us. He might have started one or two of us, but then he put us in. He kind of staggered us into the game, and by the end of the game, you know, there were seven sophomores playing. And I really think you know, because I think there were a lot of people in Pennsylvania, you know, I mean, this guy's dropped in here from Brooklyn, you know, with the accent and you know, all that stuff, and I think they looked at him like a Martian, you know, and they thought, you know, hey, this guy, you know, this guy didn't play big time football, he's an Ivy Leaguer, you know, all those kinds of things, and I think he did have a little bit of a anxiety about the whole thing, but He had a great staff. You know, we had really, really good guys. We had, you know, Jim O'Hora, who was my coach. We had J.T. White. And, of course, we had Bad Rad, you know, who was a treat. He's going to be there. Rad's going to be there on Friday. And it's funny because I called Rad, you know, when we were going to put this thing together, you know, when they were putting this thing together for for the Letterman. So I call, you know, and Rad answers the phone, and I said, "Hey, Rad, you got to make it. Can you come up to the thing for the Letterman?" And he goes, "You know, I didn't think I could." He said, "Do you know what I'm doing now?" And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm a consultant at Westminster." So he's coaching. He's a consultant. He's 80 years old.
Oh, you know? My goodness.
And
he's amazing.
And, you know, he is just a piece of work. He was Hammer's recruit when he came up there, so that was a kiss of death, you know, too. Okay. You know, that Rad endorsed Hammer was, the kiss of death, you know.
Oh, my goodness. How much did your relationship with Joe change over the years once you moved on and then got your life established as he continued to coach?
Well, you know, there were a couple things, you know, of course, in my life that, weren't the best. You know, we had an autistic son.
You and I have done that autism walk 10 years, and you show up every year. It's been an important cause for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and Joe was real, you know, very sympathetic and very, you know, very helpful in that. And he, I know with a lot of other guys too over the years, you know, who Joe, helped he was always the first thing he always wanted to know was how the kids and he always talked about my kids and he and Sue. You know, we're unbelievable in that. The thing that amazed me is, you know, my father died when I was, 6 months old, and my mother remarried when I was 12, and then my stepfather died almost, you know, immediately of a stroke. So my mom's name really wasn't Smear, it was Ditko, D-I-T-K-O, and of all the people that recruited me, the only ones that ever remembered to call her by her, you know, her last name, which was Ditko, were the Paternos. They were unbelievable, and they never forgot her name. And I often, you know, thought to myself, geez, how do they recruit, you know, hundreds and hundreds of kids over the years, and for them to remember, you know, my mother's married name was, it was really unique and it was really neat. And it was a little thing, but it was kind of good. And they would always ask about my mom, and of course I was recruited. There was a priest involved, Monsignor Fleming from Johnstown was involved, with my recruiting and stuff. And they always remembered him, and it was just Joe was a tough guy at times, and he had his things about what the way he wanted things done and stuff, but I always thought he was so committed to the way he wanted things done, and whether you liked it or not, that's the way it was going to happen, and it was a sign of a leader. And there were things that I always think about, stuff that he said, like, if you keep hustling, something good will happen, He used to always tell us that. And Steve, honestly, I told my kids that, you know, I always said, hey, look, whether you're playing sports, you got an assignment to do in school, you got a business opportunity, just remember, if you keep hustling, something good will happen. And that always hit home with me, and it always will. And it was a great saying. It's simple, but very good.
Steve, finally, with all the twists and turns and ups and downs that any life brings, what is it about Penn State and what is it about Joe Paterno that, for you, brings back a fondness and a foundation for your life?
Well, first of all, I belong to a great fraternity, the Grand Experiment. I'm proud of the guys that I played with and the guys that have played before and after me. And so I know that Joe brought us all together. He picked us, and most of us have done very, very well, both in football and outside of football. And we owe it to Joe because he was the stabilizing force in our lives. And I think other than our parents, Joe was that person that meant a lot to us. And through thick and thin, you know, he was a great man for us. So, and I think if you talk to most of the guys, that's what they'll say.
Well, Steve, you know, it's always a privilege for me to have any few minutes that we ever get together. I enjoy it very much, and because of you, I get to work with Jack Ham, so I'm really eternally grateful.
Well, I'll be seeing him over the weekend, and he got me one of those cheap rooms at the Penn Stater.
Of course he did.
I just was in touch with the mortgage company. I'm going to take out a mortgage to pay for the two nights that I'm staying at the Penn Stater. I told him, thanks a lot. You know,
Holy hammer.
Here's what I told him. I said, I'm not taking out my wallet one time there. You're buying me food and alcohol while I'm up there. Okay, so that's the plan. And maybe we'll meet up with Reed too. We'll meet up with Mike. We'll have a good time.
Yeah, Mike will be up here. And, and by the way, better ham than Prue.
Well, you know how rotten he is to Prue. He always tells him, wait a minute, that's a Letterman function. You didn't let her, you know?
That's Jack. That's what he'd say.
He gets Prue so bent out of shape, he goes, wait a minute, that's a Letterman function. You didn't let her, Steve. You can't come, you know? I tell you what, he drives the stake in real deep, but, you know, that's the way we've been acting like this since we were 18, 17, so, you know, what the heck, might as well not change now.
Never change, my friend. Thanks so much,
sounds
Steve.
Good.
I appreciate this so much. I look forward to seeing you Friday night.
Yeah, see you then, Jonesy. Bye-bye.
Steve Spear. Was that as enjoyable? I could have sat here for 3 hours and talked to him. He's one of the easiest, nicest people to talk to. Great family. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what a great guy.